Welcome back to the Property Management Show, where we deep dive into the world of property management, marketing, and entrepreneurship. Your hosts are Marie Tepman and Brittany Jones from 4&Half Marketing Agency. Since 2012, 4&Half has helped many property managers just like you grow their businesses by using marketing strategies that attract owner leads. Whether you need help with your website, your SEO, online reputation, content like video or copy for your website, blogs, etc., social media, paid advertising like Google Ads, you name it, we can help you. Visit our website, 4andhalf.com, to learn more. That's FourAndHalf.com. So we have two guests on the show today. We have Scott Brady and Garrett Brady from Progressive Property Management in Southern California. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Glad we could be here.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to make this work kind of like last minute. And Scott, you've been on the show multiple times before. And I remember the conversations with you tend to always be kind of like forward-looking, always about kind of challenging the status quo. And, you know, speaking of being forward-looking, you have your son, Garrett, with you, who is a big part of that plan for the future, right? And so to start us off, and for the benefit of listeners who are tuning in for the very first time, can you share how the journey of Progressive Property Management began? And then, you know, Garrett, what inspired you to join the family business?
Sure. I'll give a history and Garrett can jump in when he joined the company. So I think a pretty similar story to many property management companies. I was a top agent, had a brokerage. After the recession, I thought, you know, there'll be another recession. I might want to be better prepared this time around. So I started the Progressive Property Management about 2012. And then it became incorporated in 2015. And we kind of grew organically through marketing and kind of the normal stuff. And over the course of the last 12 years, we've grown to about 1,000 properties under doors under management. Garrett joined the residential side in 2018. And it was a good company. We were learning how to be more profitable along with growing the company. Our business model is unique in that we're really a virtual property management company. We hire real estate agents to be property managers throughout Southern California. We're really the back office and the marketing machine. And then it was about 3 years ago, I decided to get into association management. And now we manage about 130 plus associations and about 7,000 owners. Same business model. We hire people to be community managers offsite, and we do the back office compliance, collections, and whatnot. And it was really 3 years ago. I was diagnosed with tonsil cancer, and I realized we were not prepared as a company to either sell, or it wasn't generating enough cash flow to kind of service my lifestyle, and it wasn't ready yet to be handed off to Garrett. So we made a number of decisions 3 years ago. That have, because you have a choice as an owner of a management company, either you're going to sell it, you have a liquidity event, or you're going to keep it and just live off the cash flows, or you're going to have somebody in your family or a partner take it over. And how do you structure that so it's fair to them and fair to you? And that's really a lot of the decisions we made the last 3 years. And I think we're pretty comfortable where we're at and the decisions we made.
Garrett, do you have anything to add from your point of view?
It's definitely been a bumpy road. So I joined in 2018 and it was very kind of old school before everybody had programs and VAs and kind of shared a lot it was very regional. So I got to see the arc of the industry, which is really interesting to see from going from, shall you say, Stone Age to modern technology and making it more appealing as an industry to join. I joined because it was, a job out of college, a family business to join. But now that I've been a part of it, I see the value of real estate and how it interacts with so many other sectors, a business that provides income to, employees. And honestly, cash flow is king. Mm-hmm. And being in property management provides cash flow to do well in bad times and good times alike.
Yeah, great. And so it sounded a lot like a diagnosis kind of spurred the thinking about legacy planning, right, Scott?
Yeah, it was when you were told you may live 5 years, you may not, you start thinking, okay, what does this company look like, 3 to 5 years from now? And it really, I hired a consultant who was outside the industry, who came from kind of big corporate from Disney, and to come in and really give me that consultation. And the first thing he told me to do was to send Garrett to graduate school. I thought, well, that doesn't seem to make sense. But he goes, no, it will be transformative. It will make him, rather than being look like it's nepotism, it'll make him look like he deserves a position because he's acquired that education. So we spent the money and sent him to a local top real estate institution, Chapman University. And he spent a year in that program. And at the same time, I decided to, to give him some skin in the game. So every year that he's here, he retains 2.5% of the company. So we started that a few years ago, and now he's up to
just about
15%. And the idea was that I maintain controlling interest, but every year he gets, now he's 15% of the distributions of the value of the company. So in 15 years, then he has controlling interest or about that time, and then he makes all the decisions. So it was a way to give him some skin in the game, some ownership, but still maintain control until that day were to occur.
And so, out of curiosity, how did that conversation look like? Initial conversation look like, right? Because, Scott, you started thinking like, wait, this company isn't set up to be taken over by Garrett or another company for selling. Things have to happen. So, how did you broach that subject with Garrett? And Garrett, how was that for you?
Well, I knew by the time I got ill, so that was 2021, he'd been with the company 3 years, that he had the skills that I don't have. I'm a sales and marketing guy. Garrett's a very good operations guy. And I knew the future of this business wasn't in sales. It was in our operations because, you're managing 130 associations. You've got to have good systems and processes. So Garrett does all the hiring of the RTMs, all the training, providing the resources too. So we now have...
We have... 13 remote team members. Right
now. 13 remote team members, and we only have about 13 full-time employees. So the future of this company isn't hiring full-time employees, it's hiring remote team members to do the work so that the employees can manage them. And so it was really understanding that where my skill set was in opening new businesses. So we now own escrow companies, the association management, we're getting into some other ventures. And that way I could be doing that. I didn't have to be in the office. I didn't have to work on the business or in the business. Garrett could work in the business. And he had the credibility around here after being in the business 5 years that I don't do hiring and firing. I don't do any kind of management of the staff. My job is to sit with Garrett once a week and say, what's the next opportunity for us? And to make sure, though, that the management company is being run properly because it's the gift that keeps giving, right? That's the cash flow machine that allows us to do these other ventures. Want to chime in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on my side, I didn't really have an expectation for this discussion. Mark Cunningham, who's pretty well known, obviously mentioned that he had a buyout, or he had to do a buy-in for his ownership of the family business. So the fact that I was able to basically buy ownership over time with my time, with my commitment to the business, I thought was great. I get more value out of just learning how to run a business, how to deal with staff, how to handle operations and corporate accounting and, all that obviously it's great to have that security in mind long term, especially as our business has grown. So I was happy to take the offer. I know other people are in same predicaments where they have to either do a buy-in or they have to have that tough decision. For us, it was easy. I trust my father. He'll have forgotten more about business than I've learned so far. So if he has something that he thinks is the good decision to take, I'll trust it.
Yeah. And part of this was when we got into association management, you have our website, which I think we have the best association management website in the industry. We knew we were going to have to not make profit for a while as you're growing that side of the business and you're adding staff and adding resources and building websites. And so I thought that, what was reasonable then was to give them that ownership without having to buy in for it. And we'll continue to do that. It's good because I have three children. He's not my only one. My daughter, though, is well taken care of by her husband. Her family doesn't want to get involved in business whatsoever. She's one of our branch managers for residential. My other daughter's in Nashville. Again, not really. So we had a nice situation where I didn't have three kids fighting over the company, who gets what and who does what. It's really, Garrett's the only one who really raises his hand and step up to this industry.
Yeah, I can imagine how chaotic that would have been if all the kids wanted a stake and all the kids wanted to be the head person, you know, running the company.
I think Brian Birdie has said at a conference, I think he's got like 10 family members in the business, some crazy number, right? And that'd be really, I think, difficult to manage. It's easier when you have one person who's really interested and, more importantly, that is qualified. You know, if Garrett didn't have the skill set, I wouldn't just arbitrarily give him ownership of the business. Why not just hire somebody to be CEO and just to live off the proceeds? And so it's just not that he's my son. He's actually the most qualified person here to run. Right now, he runs all residential, all the remote team members, and he's slowly getting into the association management side.
Yeah. And I remember, sorry, Garrett, I kind of stalked you on LinkedIn. Hope you don't mind. I kind of saw on your LinkedIn that I think when you were an undergrad, you ran kind of a small direct mail marketing company. And I know that Scott is always the evangelist for direct mail. Like, it works for me. Don't knock it till you try it. And so, but you were saying, Scott, that like Garrett's expertise is in the operations, but based on his LinkedIn, he was also helping, I'm guessing, with marketing. And so it's not exactly like he just has experience in operations, right? Like, he also tried different areas of the company.
Well, yeah, he'll tell you about his background in college. He went to Northern Arizona University. When I was a realtor, I used to farm the entire city, a city here called Placentia, about 15,000 households. And he did all the mailings for me. He would drop the notepads. He hired other classmates and organized them. And we would drop 10,000 notepads to the entire city over the course of a month. So he ran that whole group. I'd give him the notepads and the bags and the mailer, and he would take off. And he did that all through high school. And I went to college. He continued to work. And you can tell you what you did at college.
Yeah, we did the direct mail primarily for my father and other realtors in the brokerage, but we did try offering it to other realtors in the area. Just wasn't a really enjoyable experience when you're in high school wanting to go out and have fun instead of working weekends in the hot sun walking around. When I went to college, I took basically a year to kind of just study, join clubs. Then I worked at a DoubleTree Hotel. I worked in like six different departments there. So it was really enjoyable. And I actually ended in the maintenance division for my final year, which I loved, which helped me when I came back from college. I actually did maintenance for our company for about 1 or 2 years. I ran our kind of our crazy maintenance division with our old school guy. Mm-hmm. But that's actually one of my passions, is to get my general contractor's license as my next step, so that way we can run a subdivision in the company for maintenance and eventually for fixing and flipping properties. And, you know, who knows?
That's interesting. You kind of did other things and then you ended up kind of figuring out like the things that excited you and made you passionate and the things that you didn't really like. And it sounds like it's a perfect fit because, I can't remember who said this, but I've heard this before. The organization's biggest weakness is the CEO's or the founder's expertise. So Scott, you're really sales and marketing type of person. And so it's like, if you leave, that will be the weakness. But since you're still here, you know, that's not the weakness. And so it's great that your son's kind of expertise and where he shines is like where, you know, you're not as, you know, passionate about, which is like the maintenance, the operations.
Well, I think Garrett was smart to recognize each other. He was smart to recognize that to create value here, he'd have to do the things I can't do or don't want to do. Otherwise, I'll hire somebody to do them. And so he, I think, recognized here's what I can do well. He could see where I'm not, proficient. And I've always been the person, if I don't do something well, I delegate. I just really focus on, you can't be a well-rounded person. You can't be good at everything. I'm good at content. I'm great at marketing. I'm very good at sales. I'm good at seeing the big picture. seeing opportunity, but I'm not good. I don't know how to do our software for association management. I couldn't even get in and tell you anything. You know, not my thing. and we have operations for that, right? And really, you know, what Garrett's got done is say, okay, this is the weaknesses in the company. These are the strengths, but this is the weaknesses. And it was always in this company operations. It was always in systems. It was always in, as we say, if somebody got hit by the bus, would everything fall apart or could we continue on? And we found the real opportunity wasn't hiring people, was hiring remote team members. And we, up to probably 5 years ago, we had zero. And now we have 13. And we try to, we'll probably add, at least by the end of the year, another two or three. And we actually now, he's actually training a remote team member to be a community manager. So for our small communities under, say, 10 owners or 12 owners, it's an unlicensed activity. You do everything by Zoom. You know, we can have somebody do the inspections, you know, monthly. And that could be a profit center where nobody else can figure out how to make a profit on 8 to 20 owner communities. We think we can train a couple remote team members to be community managers and tell the communities that's what we're doing. So it's another opportunity, even doing back office. We've looked at a lot of association management companies that aren't using remote team members, don't have systems, aren't automated. Well, we may be able to do that for them, right? Create another profit center. So as you've heard me say, this industry, I think residential management's tough right now. I mean, nobody's buying investment properties in Anaheim for $800,000 and converting them to rentals, and nobody's moving up, you know, because there's just very few sales. So where the opportunity is, we think, is association management and maintenance. That's where the money's at.
And to interject, you can tell from Scott's talking that he's very goal-oriented. You know, we always have long-term goals that we focus on. And you made a point about we balance each other out. We have a saying, myself and another team member, that if the saying is, everybody has to be on the bus, on the right seat on the bus, with the bus going in the right direction. Our saying is that Scott makes the bus go 100 miles an hour, and we pick up the pieces that fall off as we go. So it works out where he's the one, you know, really driving it. He has a famous saying where the best times in business are when you're uncomfortable. You never want to be comfortable, and then all of a sudden you get hit by a wave that you didn't see coming. But if you're always uncomfortable, you're always growing. And my job is to pick up the pieces that kind of fall off as we keep going faster and faster. And he's the one that keeps kind of pushing that that envelope. So it works out.
Yeah. And speaking of kind of like not being just comfortable with what you have right now. So Garrett, you're the director of operations, right, for Progressive Property Management. And when I was LinkedIn stalking you, I saw in your profile that you said your focus at the company is to grow the business to 8 figures and develop ancillary departments. And you listed like a whole bunch of other departments, including commercial and maintenance. And so that seems like a lot, right? Given that you're like literally running the ship right now. And then you're also looking forward to like building all these ancillary businesses. So how are you able to balance the need for innovation or creating new departments while maintaining the core values and systems that have made the current company successful?
Well, there's a lot to say to that. One is that we pay our team members well. We are very hands-off in how we oversee them. They're expected to do their job, whether they see it as the standard way of doing it or whatever makes it work. So we don't have to really worry about the job being done on the day-to-day side. So I'm usually there just when things kind of escalate to another level that they need a sign-off or they need, you know, really just a second opinion. But they're great at what they do in their role. And I have team members that if I don't see for a day, I know that they're taking care of their work without me having to, you know, worry about it. The other part is, luckily, we've also weeded out bad clients. So ones that have taken up too much time, been too much of a liability. Growth allows you the opportunity to get rid of people that aren't a good fit. And growth also allows you to have team members that want to stay with you and want to become B and A level players. So that way they can be a part of a growing business. So most of it is just kind of, as we've progressed and grown over time, it's worked out in that favor. But it is tough. Most of my day is spent working in the business. Most of Scott's day was spent working on the business. I'd like to be in that position, but that's not where I'm supposed to be right now. I still have to be handling the small problems as they come up. But yeah, eventually I have time on weekends after hours, just brainstorming with Scott on what we can do. And it's all small steps. You don't ever make a big jump forward. It's always small actions that get you to new goals and new paths. And it's just kind of testing it. Sure. Scott has a product he's launching for health that he is tested slowly over time. He didn't just dump a bunch of money and commit to this fully. And that's the same thing that I would do with maintenance or with any other kind of division we run. And it's obviously relying on the current team members and the current income to support that.
And the nice thing about our business model is if we were a traditional business model, we'd probably have another 15 community managers here, another 7 property managers, and then you're managing people. You're managing, people are flawed, right? Instead, we manage processes here, right? And we can perfect those. We can get those pretty close. So it gives us the ability to make these small bets. I'd rather own 10% of something than 100% of nothing, right? So we'll make a small bet and bring in partners. And when I do an escrow company, I don't own 100%, I own 20%. And bring in partners on the other 80% that bring in the escrows, right? So I think part of it is just our mindset is we're willing to make less margin, but by doing that, we have better growth because of our pricing and money. And we're not managing people for the most part. The people we have here, the 12 that are full-time are good at what they do. So we can then manage the processes and the RTMs that allow us to both grow quickly and also take chances on some other businesses.
And so at what point did you make everything official on paper, right? Because it's like, it's one thing for you, Garrett, to be like on the payroll. This is your position. These are your job responsibilities. But is there a separate kind of like legacy planning piece that needs to be put on paper? So if, you know, God forbid something happens, you know, like the lawyers know what to do, you know, estate knows what to do. Like, is that already in place or are you working towards one?
No. So it's both formal and informal. So the formal is he has a document that he gets 2.5%. That's tracked. And then we have a family trust that makes it clear how it's going to work that should we pass before he's controlling interest, he has to buy out my other children. And then there's an informal part that if, God forbid, I were to drop dead tomorrow, you're going to continue to pay my wife, your mother, my salary until you take controlling interest. So I wouldn't put that in writing, but I think there's just a known, we've had this discussion that I will come back from the dead and hunt you down if you don't maintain that. But that's kind of the formal and the informal.
That's great. Do you have any input, Garrett? Like from your point of view, like, you know, did you have any input in that arrangement? Like, what was your experience around like the different parts of that agreement?
I think it's incredibly generous that I get a portion of the business each year I'm working in the business. It's very fair. Obviously, it means I'm not going to have control and interest until I'm, 50-ish. But I also will be running more and more of the business anyway, just naturally. I mean, he takes off usually around 2 or so. He works on other projects. So the day-to-day will eventually be handled by me even before I'm actually controlling interest. I'm more than happy to support the family. I'm more than happy with the arrangement we have. But I would say it's a tough discussion to have. Especially when he's going through cancer treatment. My mom did not want to listen or be a part of that discussion whatsoever, which is why he and I get along so well, as we're able to just kind of look at it factually and what's the best arrangement to make. I'm more than happy with, my commitment, what I need to do. And it works out well that he can trust me in that as well.
And that kind of segued into the discussion I had with Deb Newell. That was at, I think it was at Broker Owner last year, mm-hmm. that we realized that there's 6,000 people in NARPM, call 5,000, and either they're going to sell They're going to just keep it in the cash flow. They're going to have a legacy. And we realize we're not the only ones in this position. And, you know, how do you work through these issues? So she started that. And I think it's been a bumpy ride for her. I think she's got 8 or 10 people kind of informally involved. I think they're going to get together, a broker owner, and get more formal about it. But, you know, as Garrett's communicated to me from the first few meetings, it's all over the map. Some people have a very good process in line and it's very seamless, and others it's incredibly messy. And there's, you know, the owner's going to go out feet first and then there'll be a fight. And I just think we didn't want to have that happen. I think that's kind of the nice thing about when you have a life-threatening disease, you stop dilly-dallying. You say, you know what? Yeah, I wasn't going to last forever anyway. Let's kind of get our arms around this and let's focus and get this figured out. And I'm glad we did that. And certain other ventures I do, he's not involved. He has no ownership interest. So in the product I'm developing, he's not involved. Escrow, he's not involved. But on maintenance, we're thinking about creating a whole maintenance division. We'd be 50-50 partners because he'd launched that. So I try to be fair that if something he's doing and he's putting up the money, putting up the time and effort, then he should have, you know, higher ownership.
Yeah, I think part of the list of things, Garrett, that you are intending to introduce as ancillary source of revenue is also like commercial, because wasn't that the master's that you took up, like commercial real estate?
Yeah, I went, did a 1-year accelerated program. We had top brokers and dealers and private equity funds talk to us about commercial real estate. How do you structure deals? How does it work? What's involved in it? So I learned a lot about from industrial to office, retail, multifamily. I thought it was incredibly engaging. It's something that mm-hmm. I would like to pursue in the future, but you know, you try to protect the nest egg right now. Mm. Try not to put too many eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to do long term. It's also a very eye opening experience. I don't necessarily enjoy the nature of commercial real estate as much, but I do enjoy different aspects of it in regards to what is raising a fund. How do you do a partnership? How do you mm-hmm. deal with the other behemoth, which is he has a great story from one of our really well-off friends that said, essentially, real estate and commercial real estate is the dollar business, and residential management is the nickel business or the dime business, and HOA management's the penny business. But if you get really good at taking pennies and combining them into dollars, and the same thing with dimes, well, everybody wants the dollar. They go around the dime to get to the dollar. And if we become really good at that, then we'd be able to stretch our own path and our own future. And commercials, and it's an attractive offer, but it's one that I would have to wait to get into once I feel more confident if the opportunity arises.
Yeah, very even keel.
I've given a number of speeches on exhorting my residential management colleagues to get into association management, and they won't do it because they're like, I'm making $200-$300 a door per month. Why would I do an association management where it's $30? Right. That seems like uh-huh. it's a penny business. And the answer is exactly. Nobody wants to be getting this business. You know, anybody get into it. Residential management is an easy business to get into. You just tell the Department of Real Estate, I've opened a management company. Well, there's thousands of them, right? It's just too many, if you will. Association management, nobody wants to get in that business, and it's not easy to get into. You got to kind of understand it, and you have to have departments. So that's the barrier to entry, and that allows us to take our profit from association management and make these small bets into maintenance, or we're talking about rolling out an owner benefits package, right? That we now have almost 8,000 owners that we could roll out to our owners, right? So, I'm almost saddened, if you will, by our industry, how little innovation there is, how little forward thinking there is, and how much people just follow the herd. And, you know, and sometimes you've just got to look at your market, look at the opportunity, and figure it out. It's not easy sometimes, but you figure it out.
And so, How important do you think transparency is with a team in terms of like the details of the legacy planning? Or like, are they privy to kind of information about like what you have in store down the line? Or is it more of like they focus on their departments? Once they actually implement something that changes their day-to-day, that's the only time we kind of let them be informed.
So we're a big believer in complete and utter transparency. So everybody at this company knows that Garrett's going to be taking over the company. I stopped hiring and firing and managing a year or 2 years ago. So he does the hiring because I don't want them coming to me because I hired them and, say, well, gee, plea for their job to me. So I think everybody in this office knows where the future is. And we have great operations people who are paid well to do what they do well. But in the end, I think there's no doubt here where the future is. We have a holiday party. He hands out some of the awards. He does the presentations. He gave a speech this year. The key was that they have to recognize that he's not doing it because he's my son. He's doing it because he's just really good at what he does. And that was me backing out, and I'm really bad at that stuff anyway. It was kind of that made it clear to them. But if it hadn't been for, Garrett Brady didn't exist, I'd be hiring somebody to do that job. And he's not just here because he's my son. He's here because he's really good at running this company. When we go to the holiday party, we'll have people come up. It's my favorite day of the year because we get to, everybody together from all the disparate parts of Southern California. And I have a lot of branch managers come up and say, thank God for your son. By the way, here's how dedicated he is. We still believe in having an emergency line in-house because I believe as a company, that's our time to shine. That shouldn't be outsourced to the Philippines. That should be somebody picks up, can look up, say, okay, we know who your community manager is, or we know this, we know that, we know who your property manager is. Garrett still has that phone on the weekends. And we'll be out at a restaurant and he'll have to get up and take a 20-minute call about a water leak or somebody turned off the water at some community in, Moreno Valley. So I think that shows more than anything else. And everybody knows he carries that phone and everybody understands how important that is. Now we're going to get that off his plate. That's our next plan and get somebody to do that. But that's how committed he is. And that phone, how often does that phone go off?
It's about 6 times a day.
6 times a day we have an emergency call. Yeah, because, it's a loose definition.
The nature of the beast.
Yeah. Well, and there's a very loose definition of emergency in association management.
Yes.
My front port light went off and they're calling the cops, right? So, I think that really shows to not just me, but to the entire company, how committed he is to the success of this business.
Awesome. Now, have there been, challenges in implementing the legacy plan that both of you kind of agreed on? And if there are, how have you addressed them?
Not on my side. I mean, I know in the other members of the Nets in Line team, they've mm-hmm. broached subjects of some, anger about how they don't get to have that discussion about how this is going to translate or they feel like they're carrying most of the load or they're doing the lion's share of work, but they're mm-hmm. getting a portion of a return. I'm lucky in that I was pretty laid back in the sense that I see that there's more value in the lessons I learn and the accomplishments I'm able to take, and I could use this anywhere else. And then understanding that this is really his business. I mean, he's put in more money in starting and raising the business and paying for the losses over time that he's just now slowly getting a return on. We ran no profit or very low profit for years and even negative profit for more than that. So this is finally a chance for him to kind of get his return on capital. And I understand that. I'm able to kind of look at it without thinking, woe is me, where's my time? I want to have my moment in the sun. It's a long life to live. There's a lot to enjoy about it. And I think it's one of the best things that he and I both get is to spend time together in a business. Again, we have a family friend that created an incredibly successful business that he said, I'm jealous that you get to spend time with your family. You get to watch your son and your daughter business. And this is a guy that will, have more money than he'll know what to do with. I took it as an opportunity that, you don't normally get. And I'm happy that I'm able to, provide a return that makes it worthwhile for him to see that this is going to be left in good hands.
And for me, I hate having partners. I had a business partner till about 2012, and we got divorced. We owned a Coldwell Banker franchise. We had an escrow company. It was ugly. It was messy. And I said, I never want a partner again. So when Brian Garrett came along, I remember the first time I gave him the books, and I was putting every dime back into growing association management and growing residential and trying some other projects. And he was kind of horrified. He's like, wait a minute, we manage like, you know, 900 properties and we don't make any money. And I go, isn't that great? We don't pay taxes. We put it back in other stuff. It's fantastic. And of course, I still sell real estate. So I have additional revenue sources and I pay myself a salary. But I think it's been good for me it's been good for him to see that all those decisions I made came to fruition. And we now add 6 associations a month. And we do have a lot of bank credits that we can use to, you know, use for other purposes. And so it's been gratifying for me to see the fruits of all that labor and that risk. And now I don't mind having him as a business partner because I think he's found out he's smart to figure out where he should step in and where he should step out. And it's been great. Before I got sick, I got here at 9 and left at 5 and made sure people didn't leave early. And, you know, I have no problems now getting here at 9:30 and leaving at 2. I've earned that. We've had a couple employees leave who are in their 20s because they said, you know, I don't know, it's a lot of work and I really want to enjoy my life. And I tell them, yeah, I don't remember my 20s. I remember as working and hump and humping and having 3 kids and driving to Beverly Hills and getting home at 7 and being exhausted. And, you know, maybe if you can get away with enjoying your 20s, that's great. But to me, 20s is about learning, about becoming really good at something that pays off in your 30s. And I think Gary gets that.
Yeah, throughout this whole interview, it's been really clear, Garrett, that like you're on the right seat on the bus, you know, like you get it and you want it. So it's really good because especially when like talks about like legacy planning happen, because it's family, a lot of times what you're talking about isn't the business. It's really about like the emotional component. So it's really nice that you guys were able to find kind of a common ground where you both are objectively looking at like, you know, what needs to be done and how can we both kind of be at peace with what we put in place. So that it's really great.
Well, and as an owner, you have to give up your liquidity event. And what I mean by that is you can have good cash flow. I can tell you whatever I'm making. It's a good cash flow. It's a good life. But I could right now sell the business for probably $7 million, $8 million. Even after taxes, have a pretty good liquidity event. We've had this discussion. I'm going to forego that. I'm going to forego that liquidity event and I'll stick with the cash flows. My life is good. Would $5 million make it better? Maybe, but it wouldn't make it materially better. We've got my wife and I have everything we need right now. And to know that in 15 years, he'll be in so 15 years at his 50, he'll be 20 years ahead of me at that time. So that's a conversation you have with your spouse. And my wife's agreed to be okay with the cash flows and keep this as a legacy. And that's a decision you have to make. That's probably the biggest one.
Yeah, I know, Scott, you're one of the biggest proponents of kind of like not selling in the face of the very attractive offers going out there. Yep. And so, yeah, it is a big decision and definitely good that your wife agrees. Mm-hmm. And so what advice do both of you have for listeners who may be in family-run businesses, who maybe are in the early stages of planning for their own transition, or maybe they haven't even broached the subject at all or thought about it?
You know, it's not an easy discussion to have, meaning that if I was still just a real estate broker and I had a big real estate team, Garrett couldn't be a good realtor. It's not his skill set, right? He doesn't have that ultra competitive fire in the belly you have to have to be a top agent. And I tried it with my daughter and she didn't have that fire in the belly. She's not a realtor anymore. I mean, she has a real estate license, but she's not trying to become the top realtor in her community. Mm-hmm. It just so happened your family member has to have the skill set to do this business. You just can't hand it off and say, regardless if you're competent or incompetent, here goes your business. We have relatives that the father was really good in a certain industry, and he handed it off to his kids, and they're terrible at that industry, and they'll drive that business into the ground. And if I felt that was true, we wouldn't be here right now and talking about the legacy and the handoff and the whole thing. I might have kept it just as a cash flow machine, and I don't think I'd ever have. I never would have sold it. I don't think. And part of the reason I wouldn't sell is not just because if you sell, there's taxes and you have to live on 5% of that. And if you're doing well as a company, you should have a profit margin that exceeds that. I still like getting up and coming here and interacting with our staff and our group and our team members. And I love going to that holiday party and having 60 real estate agents say, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have, you know, consistent cash flow and I wouldn't be have the lifestyle that you've given us. And so for all those reasons, I wouldn't sell. But you really have to know the skill set of the person who's going to be, you know, in that legacy seat. Worked out with Garrett, but it might not have. If this was my other daughter, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
How about you, Garrett? From your point of view, what advice would you give someone who is maybe formally or informally next in line?
It's tough to say because the people I have spoke to, most of them are, you know, disgruntled about the current, you know, outline they have. I would say it's a dichotomy of having patience, knowing that, you know, your family, your father or mother put in 20, 30 years in this business. You put in 5, you have to, you know, pay your dues just like you would in any other corporation. Mm-hmm. And there's more security, at least with a family run business, than if you were working at GM. But then the flip side of that is you have to know your value. You know, it takes years to, you know, become great at what you do. But once you are great, the world beats a path to your door. You're able to charge any amount of money you want to do what you do incredibly well. So if you have that value, if you know that you should be of value in the business, and you're not getting that return, then you'd have to have a, you know, hard discussion. Maybe it's time to, you know, have that hard discussion or move on, find a better avenue for your skill set. But you have to have patience, but you have to also know what your value is.
So thank you so much for all those insights that you shared. And, you know, I know that it was kind of alluded throughout the discussion, the other company, Scott, that you're starting, it's Tasteless, right? Am I getting that right?
While we're sitting here, they sent me the new packaging. Yes, Tasteless Weight Loss. So this is our, it's been a really fun ride because it's a product where you spray. It's called Tasteless Weight Loss because one of the side effects from my cancer treatment was I can't taste anything, still can't. And so when you can't taste anything, food is just food. It's just nutrition. It's a means to the end. You don't obsess on it. And so it's been 2 years in the making, and it's we're now going to ship the first 1,000. And I brought in my other daughter. I brought in a nephew. I brought in other people because it's a whole world, you know, Klaviyo and Dropship and Facebook ads and all that stuff. So it's been really fun. If it works, great. But it was just been a nice thing to do with some other family members. And if it works, I'm happy if it does, because it really did change my life. Without taste, yeah, you know, I don't care about what's for lunch, you know. And also when I got in the weeds on that, when I started doing research, you know, food has now become so modified and processed to be addictive. You know, a chip is designed to be addictive. A Pringles chip is designed that way, and if you could have a different relationship with food, that you don't crave it and you're not addicted to it, but instead it's just something you need to have. Obviously, we need energy to work, to live. That's great. So I'm hoping it works, but if it doesn't, it's not going to change my life one way or the other. But it's like I'd like to share association management, that it changed my life getting into association management. I'm just trying to share the experience of having Tasteless, not being able to taste anything, how it can also possibly change your life. People do Ozempic at $1,000 a month, and they
hear bad things about it.
They don't know why it works, but it works. But the day you go off of it, you're getting all that weight back, and they don't even know the long-term ramifications of it. You know, you stabbing yourself every day for 4 years. Well, this is a natural product that, you know what happens. You just don't taste anything.
Yeah, it's nice that you were able to kind of set your core business in a place where you could go off doing other things that you're passionate about, like Tasteless. I know you also recently wrote a book, mm-hmm. Just because it was a passion project. And yeah, it's really wonderful that you are able to kind of like lean on your next in line to keep the core business going, right? So that you can pursue other things and not feel like I've already put in 30 years in this business and I'm still stuck, just keep it going.
Yeah, so it's a blast. I get up every morning and I decide, what do I want to work on today? That's really what I do. What part of the business can I improve today? Just a little bit, incremental improvements in everything we do. And, you know, sometimes you can make a lot of money doing the things nobody else wants to do. Everybody wants to sell a $2 million listing in, Orange Heights, right? Everybody wants to do that.
Of course.
Nobody wants to manage associations. And all Tasteless Weight Loss is turning chicken shit into chicken salad, right? I mean, it happened to me. Let's do something productive with this experience. And that's really what we try to focus on. You know, if we're for Karens, nobody would need property management or association management. But guess what? Humans are flawed. They don't make good decisions. They don't get along well. They don't play nice in the sandbox. And our job is just to be there and make sure everybody does just exactly that. So, I love this industry. I can't say it enough that too often you either become the condo queen and don't pivot from just selling condos in Anaheim, or you manage your 150 doors and that's your world, is that foxhole. And the one thing Garrett will tell you is that, you know, why not do commercial? Why not do fix and flips? Why not do maintenance or known benefits packages? Why not do it? You know, and if it doesn't work, you don't like it, don't do it anymore. You know, but you've got to have that core business, which for us was always residential management. That's the core business and everything flows from that.
Thank you so much for sharing a little bit more tidbits about kind of like your passion projects, mm-hmm. and kind of like what helps you, you know, motivated.
Sure.
Appreciate both of you being on the show today.
You got it.
And that's all we have for this episode of the Property Management Show, brought to you by Four and Taft Marketing Agency. Since 2012, we have helped many property managers just like you grow their business by attracting owner leads through marketing. Whether you need help with your website, SEO, social media, online reputation, content like videos, blogs, etc., paid advertising like Google Ads, social media ads, you name it, we can help you. Visit our website, fourandhalf.com, to learn more. That's fourandhalf.com. If you are enjoying our show, please go ahead and leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. And we are always open to suggestions or feedback or comments. So just email us, marketing@fourandhalf.com. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.